This week on Meet and Three, we bring you a sensational episode where each story hones in on one of the four senses that accompanies taste.
Many of the smells that we encounter in everyday life actually exist out there in the cosmos.
Food carries all these culturally specific meanings. The fact that, you know, when you see an apple, it's not just an apple, right?
I was mostly interested in thinking about what knobs ASMR was pulling on, maybe, or how we could explain it from a psychological or emotional or evolutionary standpoint.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
There's nothing like traveling the back roads of rural Mexico, except for maybe having those back roads come to you. This episode of Agave Road Trip is brought to you by Maguey Melate, which does exactly that. Stick around after this episode to find out how you can tour the rustic palenques right from your home. But for now, strap yourself in for another episode of Agave Road Trip. This is Lou Bang.
This is Chava Periwan.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the podcast that teaches gringo bartenders about agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. And this is our third attempt to talk about how to drink mezcal.
And I'm going to put some rules in this episode so we can finish it up. And I think we should answer just one question that will keep us entertained for at least 12 minutes for sure.
Yeah.
Is, do I drink my agave spirits neat, or do I add anything to them? Is there anything you can add to them or that should add to them? Because, you know, like in really fancy whiskey places, they will, of course, never throw ice into the whiskey, but they will suggest that you throw some few droplets of water to open some of the flavors and some of the aromas. Does that happen in agave spirits? Have you seen something like that?
I saw it once. I was doing leading an agave spirits tasting at the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society in Edinburgh. So I was surrounded by all of these Scotch geeks, and I just by happenstance we were flying to a friend's wedding in Edinburgh. And originally it was scheduled for Mexico City, and they moved it because she's from Mexico City. He's from Edinburgh. They moved it, but I already had the ticket. So I ended up flying from Mexico City to Edinburgh. So I flew over with the agave spirits, and I picked up some of the spring water from one of the towns where I was bringing spirits, right? So that I could give them that. Because like, if you're drinking scotch and they add the water, like the thing you want is the water from the same community where the spirits were made, right? You get that?
I did not know that. Thanks for enlightening.
Yeah, it's absolutely not the rule, but it is the ideal. So they were all using their little eye droplets with the spring water, which cracked me up, right? Because people talk about, oh, in Mexico, don't drink the water. And here they were just, right? And you know, I don't want to suggest that they were wrong. Like, these people knew more about fermentation and distillation than I do. It was fascinating. It was the best group I've ever presented to. But they were putting it in, and they were loving it and talking about the changes, in fact, and loving that they could taste the spirit and then separately taste the water, and they could taste how the water had affected the spirit.
Wow.
Yeah.
It has happened to you. It has happened to me. I think definitely the water made a big difference.
Oh, it has to.
Yeah. And I've tried same agave species, almost same process, and just with different types of water. In Sombra, we used to do that. We went to great lengths to just find the best kind of water that'll give a good flavor profile. Because let's remember, agave spirits is just mainly ethanol and water. At least half of it is water.
Well, you know, okay. So this actually, I think, is a way that I can transition us into the thing we've been trying to talk about for now. This is the third episode, which is how to drink these spirits. So when I present to a group, the first thing I make them do is to taste in a very specific way. And what I ask them to do first is to smell out of their cup or their copita or whatever they're serving in, and then to put a little bit into their palms of their hands to smell it in a different way, to start to understand, once you evaporate some of that alcohol, what the roasted sugars smell like, right?
Well, yes, because the smell of agave is not something people have in their minds.
Right. It's exactly right.
It's something that it's not existent in the United States, at least.
Yeah, you need to open up your God, what would you even call that? Like your nasal palate? Is there a nasal palate?
Well, there's some food anthropologists that say that it's almost like learning how to read and write.
Oh.
How do you say literacy?
Yeah.
Literacy is the word in English.
Yeah.
So as you learn new words in a new language, it's the same with food and flavors and smells.
Ah, the language is the flavors and the aromas. Yeah. So I have them do that smell, right? And then the first thing I have them do is just stick their tongue into the liquid. You're not even sipping it. You're just sticking your tongue in and then rubbing what's on your tongue on the roof. Oh, don't you mock me. Rubbing what's on your tongue on the roof of your mouth and behind your teeth in a way to clear your palate.
Okay. Yeah, because you need something to clean. I get it.
You stop laughing.
I just love the image of you in a fancy restaurant of making people do that. But it's cool.
Yes.
It's cool.
Yes. And so then the second thing I asked them to do, and now we're going to circle back to what you had said. The second thing I asked them to do is to take the smallest sip they've ever taken of anything, almost like a half a sip, and hold it on their tongue to the count of five, right? At which point I start talking about why I want them to do that. And the why of it is because it's not just ethanol and water. You know, all alcohol starts life as sugar, right?
Yeah.
And the sugar source that's used to make wine comes from grapes. And those grapes take a maximum of 4 months to reach maturity. And you compare that to the agave, where it's, let's say, at the very minimum, 3 years, very minimum. And most of it's going to be like 6, 8, maybe even 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And there's no difference really from one sugar source to the next. It's all like basically chemically sugar. And but it's fructose, yes?
Well, no, but there's a lot of different, like what gives the different flavors to each spirit or alcohol are the other tiny little traces of stuff. Yeah.
That's exactly my point, right? Otherwise, there would just be wine. There wouldn't be wine from different grape varietals, because even those grapes have different, from grape to grape, have these different molecular elements that create aromas and flavors.
Absolutely right.
So, you know, so I tell people to hold that drop on their tongue to the count of five to introduce their palates to these different flavors. You know, we talk a lot about, gringos talk a lot about, I want a smooth whiskey. I want a smooth mezcal. And
I've never understood the obsession with smoothness.
Oh, I do.
I want something that has nails and teeth. I want something that is...
I'm with you, but the vast majority of the consuming public doesn't. The vast majority of the consuming public wants something simple that they can understand. They want pop music, right? They don't want classical music. They want pop music.
There's some really beautiful complex pop music, but okay, I get your point.
Thank you. So you know, I say like you're just not used to that complexity. You have to introduce your palate to it. This is how you do it. And then I tell them, now take a third sip and take it just like that second sip. That's the only way that I drink this stuff, is tiny sips held on the tongue for however long I feel like I need to, depending on the spirit. And the smaller the sip, the bigger the taste, the bigger the flavor. And the more you drink this stuff, the more your palate recognizes all of these different flavors, and the more you'll come to appreciate them.
I absolutely think so. And I have a question for you, though. Do you ever wash your mouth with the spirit?
Yeah.
Like, do you make weird sounds, like, you know, as a coffee barista will do when they're trying? Because I got, I love espresso, and I got into the habit.
You're doing the slurp. The slurp.
You know,
do me a favor? Could you do that one more time, but with your mouth right up to the mic?
No, because our sound engineer is going to kill me. I can already hear him saying, like, never do
this. You should at least apologize to him by name.
Roy Sierra, I am very sorry for the sounds that I'm making.
Okay, now go ahead and talk about the slurp.
And I got into the habit of doing that. And then I started doing that with agave spirits because I thought that spraying them around my mouth will allow me to just break them up in tiny little droplets and have more interesting flavors. And it does work sometimes, I've realized, like in some expressions better than others. But there's a big danger about doing that.
What's the danger?
Well, sometimes you're drinking really high ABV expressions, and it's hard to really hit the same spot when you're slurping.
Yeah.
And more than once, I've been covering the face of the person in front of me.
Once again, nothing you want to do in the time of coronavirus.
Nothing you want to do, no. So that's a little technique that I have. Something also that I tried out because I was doing some tasting in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I forgot that Americans are not so used, I wouldn't say all Americans, but young Americans are not so used at drinking neat spirits. I had forgotten
that. I just want to make sure that you reference that you were in Philadelphia.
Yes, Philadelphia.
And you were helping young Americans to drink these spirits. Now you can go on. That was a David Bowie tip. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Lou. So anyway, I was finding a lot, like for me, that was stunning. I was finding a lot of resistance of people to drink alcohol. I have never found that in my life before. So I can't.
It's not a resistance to drink alcohol. It's a resistance to drink it neat. That's just not our culture.
Yeah, but in my mind, it's the same thing. Anyway, like I was dumbfounded.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're getting to a point, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Don't worry. A point is coming. So what I did is I got an atomizer, like a perfume atomizer.
Yeah.
And I just started spraying agave spirits on people's mouths.
Nice. And?
And that was like a tiny little access to the spirit that was not that aggressive, and you know, it's like an invitation, and I think it worked well.
But you know, the diversions I was going to make, though, I'm glad that you stopped me, because that is a atomizer. I like that, and it reminds me of a story about when I was on MasterChef, but we'll tell that in a different episode. It brings me to the fact that most Americans, when they are drinking spirits, drink them in cocktails. And, you know, for the longest time, I was one of these agave geeks who was outraged by that idea, that you would take this beautiful handmade spirit and then you would adulterate it with orange juice.
So you only eat raw vegetables, right, Lou?
Exactly. That is all I do.
Yeah, raw meat, and you never process any of the ingredients that you get.
The argument that I would have had is that the amount of time, effort, and expertise that went into that piece of cauliflower, that head of cauliflower, is not even close to what went into making the agave spirit. And while I personally prefer to drink it neat, you know, I'm realizing that you got to meet people where they are. And there's nothing wrong with somebody who loves a cocktail having a mezcal cocktail. And if they want to make their cocktail with the most expensive agave spirit they can find, as long as they're paying for it, I don't see why they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
Yeah, but it also comes to my mind. I think of it as an ambassador kind of situation.
How do you mean?
So usually you don't choose an ambassador of a country unless you're like, I mean, there's exceptions to it, but you usually choose as an ambassador someone that looks nice and gentle and that is not going to make the other country get very nervous, right? So that's how a lot of the diplomacy has been built during the year. So I think the cocktail is a great ambassador to bring agave spirits.
Yeah. I thought you were headed the opposite direction. I was going to use margarita. Margarita has been the best ambassador for Mexico until we started understanding that tacos weren't just these Ortega hard shell things.
And not only that, like when I was in New York, I went to Existing Conditions and I had arguably the best cocktail with an agave spirit that I've ever had. And it really surprised me because it sort of remixed something that I knew very well with a different identity. And I think that's really interesting that people in America, you know, appropriation is usually said as a bad thing.
Yeah.
They're appropriating the culture and everybody gets outraged. I actually celebrate that. I think it's amazing if you can get something that comes from rural Mexico and filter it through the imagination of a group of people that has nothing to do with that. And the end result can be extremely exciting and nice and, you know, full of flavor.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, let's get out of this episode because we're just a bit over and we're going to get yelled at by Roy and Jason. and then head into the next episode. Hey, Chava, it's been great drinking with you.
It's always great. Adios.
This episode of Agave Road Trip was brought to you by Maguey Malate. And I want to thank Maguey Malate, but not so much for supporting us, Chava, though I'm grateful for that.
Of course you are.
Yeah. But I really want to thank them for su- for what they do, which is supporting these small communities where they make heritage agave spirits throughout Mexico.
So wait, how do they do it differently than other people? Because I think every brand that is buying agave spirits from the communities is supporting them. But what are they doing differently that you really like about them?
Yeah, fair enough. So, number one, what they're doing is they're sourcing spirits directly from the men and women who make them. Tiny, tiny, small batches. And there's nothing wrong with the big stuff, but these tiny, small batches is where the magic is, at least for me. And so they're sourcing directly. They're getting this stuff in the exact same form in which you would consume it if you lived in the community where it was made.
You mean if I'm in the community and they invite me to a wedding and people are going crazy drinking beautiful agave spirits, that's the same spirit I'm getting into my house?
Yeah, exactly. You're getting it in your house.
Oh, Lord.
Right? And it's coming directly to you from Maguey Malate. It's a subscription service. You go to any liquor store, you're not going to find Maguey Malate on the shelves. It's a subscription. And every other month, this box shows up with two 375 milliliter bottles. That's like half of the normal bottle size that you see. This box has two different expressions, 375 milliliters of each, by different producers that show you insights into some specific community in Oaxaca.
Oh, that's lovely.
Or some specific community in Mexico. It doesn't have to be Oaxaca.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And wait, how do I sign up for this? How do I get those spirits to my house?
Okay, so you're already sold. Look at you.
I have a credit card, which doesn't have a lot of money. It's better for scratch my back, but I'm still going to use it.
So if what you want is to receive this box every other month of two beautiful bottles of Heritage Agave Spirits, you go to their website, magueymalate.com. Nobody can spell that, and you're probably jogging or driving or on your bike right now. So Chava, how do we get them to the website?
Well, we'll put a link in our website, in our Instagram, in our Facebook, every digital medium we have, so people can link there and get to Maguey Malate.
Beautiful. And what you're going to find besides, the subscription and getting to sign up and getting those bottles at your home, what you're going to find at that website is all of the material they produce for each of these men and women who make these spirits. And it's really remarkable to me, Chava, that they've spent so much time and so much money doing these profiles for these producers that they put on their website, and then they give you a map so you can go find that producer. They give you the phone number so you can call that producer and buy more spirits directly from them. And all they're ever doing, generally, is buying one lot from that producer.
That's an insane business model. I have no idea how they make money.
Well, I know Dalton well enough to know that he's in this to make some money, but I also know that he's in it primarily to try and improve the lives of these men and women who are making these spirits, to ensure that in this economy that we live in, where everything seems to be, how do you get something cheaper and faster? He wants to see these communities thrive, and that's his business model.
Okay. I mean, very uncommon. Love it.
Yeah. So if you want to be part of Maguey Malate and you want to help these small communities remain small and do what they're doing the way they've been doing it for hundreds of years, go to magueymalate.com and sign up for a subscription.
Awesome.
Hang on, road trippers. We're not done yet. We've got an episode of Chava and Lou's Chat Fest coming up. This is Chava and Lou's Chat Fest. We're here to chat you up. Chava, what's up?
Hey there, Lou. How you doing?
I'm good. Any chance you have to go to the bathroom, Chava?
Not right now, no. But I think you were going to help me out with something or other. No.
No, not going to help you out.
Okay. I want you to help me out. Maybe I express myself.
Yeah, that gets a little weird. Yeah. Chava, you go into the bathroom alone. You don't need my help. You're a big boy.
Yeah. For a while, I've been doing that alone. But I think you were going to give me a tutorial or something.
Not a tutorial. No. So here's the thing. My friend Kim in Portland, Oregon, moved to Portland for nursing school. And in nursing school, one of the first weeks, she had this icebreaker with her fellow nursing students. And the icebreaker involved, and this blew me away when she told me afterwards, involved asking people how they like to use their toilet paper when they go to the bathroom. And I didn't realize there were options, right? This is one of those things, because you're alone in the bathroom.
Yeah.
You had time in the bathroom with your mom when you were a little kid, and then you're on your own, and you assume, or at least I assumed, and I think most people assume, that what you're doing is what everybody does, but it's not, Chava. So the question among the group was, do you fold or do you bunch your toilet paper before you use it?
You fold it. Who the hell bunches it?
See, this is just the thing. In fact, it turns out, and this is very unscientific, but in most of these Q&As where they're asking people, it turns out most people actually bunch. And the truth is, like, if you ask either side, well, why do you bunch, like, everybody says the exact same thing. It's like, I don't want to get poo on my hands. And the only way to not get poo on my hands is X. Either, like, the person who folds says, the only way to not get poo on my hands is to fold the toilet paper. And the person who bunches says it's to bunch. And then there is that rare creature who mummifies their hand. Literally wraps the hand in the toilet paper all the way around.
Well, maybe that's very Muslim in a way. Like, that's like the...
This is just a descendants of the mummies. I get that. But here's, like, that single question blew me away. And for months, it's all I could think about. And I started asking people that. And then it started bouncing around in my brain, as bathroom things tend to, as you know. Yeah. And it made me come up with another question, because my entire life, I have been using my non-dominant hand to wipe my ass.
You're not, okay.
And I just, right, I'm right-handed and I use my left hand. And I thought, well, everybody must do that, right? Like, it's a thing that's left over from the time before we had toilet paper. And it's just been handed down from generation to generation. This is that multi-generational wisdom that we talk about. So then the next question is, do you use your dominant or non-dominant hand?
I'm really trying to recreate the action in my mind right now.
Don't do it in your mind. Nobody can see you except me. Just go ahead and pretend you're wiping your ass.
No, I use my dominant hand. Yeah, like you have more.
You use your dominant.
Yeah, you have more skill.
Now.
Therefore, you cannot make as many mistakes as you could if you were using your non-dominant hand, right?
It's a theory, but I'll tell you, I use my non-dominant because I find that it's just as skilled as my dominant hand. And if something gets on it, I really want it to be on my non-dominant hand.
Okay. Like, I get that. Even though you, like, as we've learned with the coronavirus, you tend to touch a lot of things with your hands that you're not thinking about. But still, okay.
But now here's the thing. Like, I thought that was, like, it. There was no other question. And then one day I'm driving around with my friend Jim McLaughlin, Jambo McLaughlin, and he's talking about potty training his son. Oh, wait, or was it Sean? It might have been Sean Cox. One of my two friends, anyway, potty training the son, and talked about moving the testicles out of the way to wipe. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Hang on a second. Are you telling me that you take, like, a center landing to wipe your ass? Like, coming in from the center? Because for me, it's on the side. And it's always been on the side, which made me realize there's also this other thing where some people wipe front and some people side. And I think there's a male-female difference thing. Like, there's a front-to-back thing with females because of yeast infections that doesn't really hit my radar at all.
Okay, so I think the big and relevant question to this is, do you think this changes the lives of people in some way or another?
I don't think it has any pertinence whatsoever, except to illuminate for us, like, these things that we do on a hopefully daily basis, that we make assumptions that everybody does things the same way. And I don't want to try and tie it up in a neat bow to go back to agave spirits and how you travel around and one guy does X with his fermentation and you assume, but it's that in a way.
I think we're over with this, Lou. I'm very scared if you come up with a new question during the episode. So I think we're gonna close this right away.
Fair enough. Thanks for chatting with me, Chava. I'll catch you next episode.
Thanks, Lou. Adios.
Jesus.
This has been Agave Road Trip, the podcast that helps gringo bartenders learn about agave spirits. Your hosts are Lou Bank and Chava Periban. Sound engineering by Roy Sierra. Theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Mark Rico. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, recommend it to your enemies. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Lou is in charge of our social media, so if he happens to sound like an old man, forgive him. He is one. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pitbulls, Inc.
Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio Network newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the food world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network can drive you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If it drives you to drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive or walk. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to get up and stretch every 30 minutes. If you get up and stretch every 30 minutes, do not stretch beyond your abilities. Stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you do not have a doctor, listen to all the shows on the Heritage Radio Network. There has to be at least one doctor among the Heritage Radio Network podcast hosts. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.